The Civil War shook the country 150 years ago, and its impact is still felt today. Our fascination with the only war fought on American soil runs deep, so deep we keep going back and revisiting the time. Next weekend, a Civil War battle will be played out, with nobody hurt, we hope, near the shore of Lost Creek Lake in Jackson County. As you're probably aware, there were no Civil War battles in Oregon, and Lost Creek Lake didn't exist back then. Let's hear about this battle. We'll call it an enactment instead of a reenactment, and the attraction to this. We have two guests with us from the Civil War, the Cascade Civil War Society. Pam Smith is a reenactor and event planner. Welcome, Pam.
Thank you. And nice to be here.
Jim Kingery is with us as well, also a reenactor and event coordinator. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Tell us about the Cascade Civil War Society itself and how long it's been around.
Well, let's see. The Cascade Civil War Society itself was formed in late 1998. There was about a dozen members at that time, and they were all also members of the Northwest Civil War Council, our sister group up to the north. Back then, it was called the Living History Association of Oregon, which later became the Cascade Civil War Society. We got our 509C.
Tax exempt status.
Became our own standalone club as well.
And for you, Pam Smith, I mean, what's the attraction here to the Civil War? What gets people into this club? And has it gotten bigger than 12 since that time?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we're a lot bigger than 12. And I think what tends to pull people into it is an interest in history. And you go and you watch and you go, that looks like fun. But then you start getting into it and you start discovering more and more about the Civil War and the history that happens. And you go, well, I wonder if any of my family took part in it. And then you start going back. I grew up in Ohio, and so it was like that was part of it. You know, we took part with the Underground Railroad, and you go, oh, I grew up with the Underground Railroad. Well, I start learning more about it and going, I didn't know this. And you start learning more about the history, and you're going, why didn't I learn this? Where did it come from? And you start finding things out that you're going, we should have learned this a long time ago.
So it's really a matter of just keeping the history alive and getting a good grip on the stuff that led to where we are today as a country.
That's when we go to introduce the reenactments, that's what we try to tell them, that we're not trying to glorify war, because we're not. We're trying to let people know that this is a part of our history as a country. It's what helped make our country what it is today. And we need to not forget about it, because it has been the only time in our history that we have ever had families fighting against families. Because there were brothers against brothers and fathers against sons. And it's a sad part of our history that we should not ever forget.
So, Jim Kingery, it sounds like a real mix of rewards here. I mean, it is fun, but it also is a memory of a time that was not a pleasant one for American history.
Yes, this country almost skipped a generation. 600 and some odd thousand dead from the Civil War. Take all the wars combined from the American Revolution up through the first Desert Storm, and they finally surpassed that mark.
So in other words, the death toll in the Civil War.
It took from the American Revolution to Desert Storm to equal that of the Civil War. So the country almost did skip an entire generation. And there were several towns. Well, the standing U.S. Army at that time was very small. And the Confederates were all militia, although they were in the Army of the Potomac or the Army of the Tennessee and various other armies. You got a group from a small town, and they got in a tight spot. There might not be any young men coming home. You could not run in those days. Honor was very, very important. If you ran, you couldn't go home. You were disgraced. One of the worst things that could happen would be to sent home shot in the back, for example. Indicated you were running, absolutely. So, therefore, when you retreated, you always tried to retreat facing the enemy. Which can be a real trick sometimes on broken ground, if you know what I'm saying.
Right, yeah. Walking backwards, never a good thing with a gun.
No, not even. But and actually, the actual battle parts of our day take up maybe an hour to an hour and a half of the day. The rest of the time is camp life, people walking through medical demonstrations. We have music demonstrations, demonstrations of camp life, how things were done. We have some people doing cooking demonstrations, for example. So there's really a lot going on the entire day.
Is there a name for the battle? Are you calling it the Battle of – is it Battle of Stewart State Park or something?
Battle – Pam?
We call it the Battle of Stewart State Park simply because that's where we're doing it.
Makes it abundantly clear where you are.
That's where we're at.
Yes.
There wasn't, of course, any Battle of Stewart State Park, and we are fairly small. So what we are doing more with our battles is representing skirmishes that would have happened when you would have a Union company and a small Confederate company meeting. We can't do, of course, anything like
Gettysburg
or Manassas or anything, because we don't have the thousands of people required. But what you don't, what people don't think about is that there would always be companies meeting, and then they would get into small little skirmishes, and those also help to determine the outcome of the large battles.
Because they determine who we get through and get to those battles in a lot of cases.
Exactly. Correct.
Just like in Ken Burns' Civil War, one of the greatest lines was in the opening of it where they go, the Civil War was fought on 1,000 battlefields in 1,000 places. Everybody remembers the Gettysburgs, the Vicksburgs, the Manassas, the Sharpsburg, Antietam, etc. But there were just little places where a couple of units might run into each other. It was officially designated as a battle if there was shooting and there was a winner or a loser or a draw, whatever. But those were just quite numerous. They were happening all the time.
We were talking about a Civil War reenactment coming up next weekend near Lost Creek Lake at Stewart State Park, north of Shady Cove, with Pam Smith and Jim Kingery from the Cascade Civil War Society. You can join our discussion on the Jefferson Exchange. Your questions and comments are welcome at 800-838-3760 around the area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or send us an email to jx@jeffnet.org. So about how many people will you have then as part of the overall thing? And are you still looking for can people still participate, or is it just a matter of they can come out and watch?
They can come out and watch, and they can also participate. This year, I know we have two cannons coming, 2 3-inch Federal Ordnance rifles, full scale, full size. I am looking to have 50 to 75 troops actually on the field. Not a lot, but we do a good show. Last year with Gettysburg going on, the 150th, we had one artillery piece, and I believe we had about 35 troops out there. But the audience came, and they were very happy. We had one gentleman that reenacts from back east that was working for the park last year, and he said despite the small numbers, it looked as good as anything they'd ever put on back on the East Coast.
How authentic do you try to make this? For example, Pam, would you ever get on a uniform, or do you have to pretend to be a woman from the period?
I actually had a uniform on last year. What a lot of people don't realize is that women did wear uniforms. It was illegal for a woman to dress as a man back then. And so there were many women who wanted to fight, and they would dress as the man. And someone went through the entire war with no one ever finding out that they were females. The war ended. They went back to being a female until they applied for veterans benefits.
Oh, and there's the problem.
And then there was the problem. Yeah. Some of them didn't make it through the war. And so they entered and they were killed and they were buried as a man. There's a book out by a female of Sarah Edmund Edwards, and she actually went in originally as a nurse on the northern side, and she became a spy for the North, and she would go across, and she was she went across, and she had colored her skin, becoming an African American, a black person. She dressed as a woman. and to read her diary, her biography that she wrote, is really difficult because she doesn't hold anything back. And she talks about working in the hospital and the screams and the moans of the men. And there was nothing held back. And I can only read so much before I'm going, okay, I got to put this down for a little bit, because she makes it seem very, very real.
Mm-hmm. Horrible times, certainly. I mean, we're improving our munitions by leaps and bounds, and not our medical science. And so a lot of amputations, I understand, in the Civil War.
Yes, the Minie ball, which came out for the Springfield Enfield muskets, was a hollow-based conical bullet. Now, they weigh black powder bullets in grains. They should be weighed in ounces, to be quite honest. Very soft lead, and when it hits a bone, it doesn't go through it. It doesn't break it. It shatters it. Even modern surgeons say if somebody were to get hit in the arm or the leg with one of these today, it would still have to be basically an amputation. Hmm. There's just nothing left to do anything with.
All right, so there must be places where you draw the lines of authenticity here. So who is responsible, for example, to make sure that all the firearms are loaded with blanks?
That is the responsibility of the battalion commanders, the company commanders, and the NCOs. I'm the Confederate battalion commander, for example. And we do a weapons inspection every morning. We do cartridge inspection, inspect the cartridge boxes. There are definite rules for your cartridges. They can only be rolled from paper. No staples, no glue, no anything. And nothing goes down the barrel except for the powder. You dump the powder, you put the paper back in your pocket, or you drop it on the ground. No ramrods are pulled. And you get a bang and a flash and smoke, and that's all we're after.
I was going to ask you which side you're on. You kind of gave yourself away as the Confederate commander when you called the battle Sharpsburg.
Yep.
Because it's called Antietam in the north. You corrected yourself quickly, but different kind of thing. So,
well, I figure there might be some Yankees out there. They might want to know what I'm talking about.
Do the two sides stay static? I mean, if you are in a Civil War reenactment as a Confederate soldier, are you always going to be in Civil War reenactments as a Confederate soldier, or do people switch sides between reenactments?
We have people switch sides. I also have a blue coat, and I've gone out as a Union private, for example. Some people, we have one of our members, he will do Union, Confederate, he'll do sharpshooter. He just likes to have fun. We have other people that if you ask them to go out Union or Confederate, they just won't do it due to their family ties and such.
Hmm. So I was going to ask you how hard anybody works to try to keep modern-day politics off the battlefield, because certainly the display of a Confederate flag can draw some ire in our time, 150 years after the war.
Well, we try and keep modern politics off the battlefield. Well, actually, there are no modern politics on the battlefield. And, for example, on the flags of the Confederacy, the Southern Cross, the battle flag, mm-hmm. was never a Confederate flag. That was simply a battle flag, a regimental flag, to let a company or a regiment or battalion know where they were supposed to be. The actual flags of the Confederates, there was the Stars and Bars, mm-hmm. which was a blue with 7 to 13 stars in it, in a circle, then a red, a white, and a red stripe. Then they went to what's called the Stainless Banner, basically a white flag, and that little battle flag was up in the corner. Well, they found out if the wind catches, it wraps around the pole, and it looks like that outfit is surrendering, so the enemy goes up to take their surrender and gets blown to pieces. I don't see a problem. But anyway, so they went to, just before the war ended, they came out with what was called the Third National, which was the white flag with the little battle flag in the corner and then a red stripe along the edge. That one didn't really see any service. That came out just a few months before the war ended.
So set the scene for us, Pam Smith, and what will people see if they come out to view the Battle of Stewart State Park?
What they will see when they first come up is almost all of us will be living in the canvas tents, anywhere from just the A tents to wall tents. A few of our members will have what they call dog tents, and a dog tent is
A pup tent,
but each member carries one half of it, and it buttons together at the top.
Hmm.
Those are our homes. I will be up there from Thursday till Monday, and that is my home for that entire time. And we're not allowed to dig trenches. And so we'll have above ground stoves that were with wood. We will all be in long dresses. Our soldiers, our men will be in their uniforms. We will pretty much not have modern day equipment. There'll be a blacksmith. We'll may have a weaver.
I mean, do you try to keep it authentic right down to the point of conversation? I mean, like, does somebody blow a whistle at some point on Friday, and after that point, nobody gets to talk about the baseball scores or anything?
During the time when the public is there, we try to keep it as authentic as possible.
All right. So what are the periods again here? So you're going to be up there starting Thursday and running through Monday, but for folks who just want to come out and watch.
We start at 9 o'clock in the morning. That's when the camp is open to the public. On Saturday, the camp closes at 9 to the public. Our battles are at 11 and 3 on Saturday. And on Sunday, the camp reopens again at 9, and it closes at 3. And then the battles on Saturday are at 11 and 2.
Is that a Sunday 11 and 2 and Saturday?
Sunday 11 and 2 and Saturday 11 and 3.
Okay, and this is the Battle of Stewart State Park, and this is all next weekend.
Yes.
The Saturday the 14th, Sunday the 15th. Mm-hmm. At Stewart State Park along Highway 62, mm-hmm, on the way between the Rogue Valley and Crater Lake.
Yeah.
I want to thank Jim Kingery and Pam Smith for joining us from the Cascade Civil War Society. You've given us an education today.
Thank you. And can we thank our sponsors for this? Medford Taxi, Instaprint, Ravenwood Leather, Pam?
The Plumbers Association and the Outdoor Store.
Yes.
All right. Well, lots of people to thank for the Battle of Stewart State Park coming to Stewart State Park near Shady Cove next week. Again, thanks to Pam Smith and Jim Kingering, and thanks to you for listening. This has been Hour 1 of the Jefferson Exchange.